A Matter of Spirit is the quarterly justice journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. This article appeared in the summer 2018 issue on the opioid epidemic. Dead People Don't Recover by Dr. Fred Rotnick, MD. Dr. Rotnick is a professor and the director of community medicine at St. Louis University School of Medicine and the medical director of the Assisted Recovery Centers of America. As a faculty physician in family medicine and a local educator in addiction medicine, this has become my most recent tagline: dead people don't recover. People must be alive to regain their lives, their relationships, and their ability to thrive. People must be alive to engage in therapy and to develop the strength and resilience to lead opioid-free lives. People must be alive to thrive. And there's the rub. Because not everyone who is building back their lives from addiction fell from a place of thriving. Sometimes they fell from a place of existing. Perhaps they never experienced thriving. When we rescue someone from an overdose death with Narcan, or stabilize someone in the emergency department, or refer someone to a treatment program, we are assisting them from detox to treatment. When we find the right dose of a medication to stabilize cravings and brain chemistry, or provide psychosocial therapy to help someone gain insight into their behaviors, we are helping them walk from treatment to recovery. Ideally, we all don't win until we work together toward a state of thriving, positive and healthy relationships, meaningful work and commitments, a rich and reflective mindset, the apex of Maslow's hierarchy. But addiction can turn that hierarchy upside down, and people are locked into a survival rather than a thriving mode. As we see that with other addictions, we are seeing it with opioids. The current U.S. landscape of substance abuse is different from past epidemics in several ways. The supply of opioids is unlike any supply we have seen before. Opioids, both natural like heroin and codeine, and synthetic like fentanyl and oxycodone, have been available for decades on street corners and in physician and dentist offices. Illicit manufacturers and dealers are disguising their products as tablets and capsules, and manufacturing techniques are simpler and distribution networks more extensive than ever. With the conveniences of texting, overnight delivery, and social media, deliveries can be made all over the country. No longer are illicit drugs solely an urban issue. Suburban and rural communities are also common markets. Previous addiction epidemics were easy to ignore as someone else's problem and disproportionately affected the poor and those with least access to care. These drugs are more potent, purer, and cheaper than ever before. People can drop dead from their first use or from what they think is their standard hit when supplies of heroin are laced with other synthetic opioids such as fentanyl, a synthetic opioid 50% stronger than heroin, gram for gram. These facts are frightening, and more than 60,000 people died in 2016 from overdoses. And the rise continued in 2017, and it continues into 2018. We need multiple approaches to fighting this epidemic. These include law enforcement to stem the tide, first responders to rescue those in crisis and at risk of overdose, and healthcare providers to provide the treatment and therapies to help people move from detox to treatment to recovery to thriving. But we also need more efforts looking upstream. Many people call this prevention. But we need more than prevention. We need to understand what is driving so many of our citizens into addiction. We must gain a national understanding of why so many of our relatives, loved ones, and community members are knowingly engaging in addictive and potentially fatal behaviors. Addiction has been called a disease of hopelessness. The person struggling with addiction sees the behavior as the best choice or only choice in light of what they can see in front of them. Hope is gone. There is no opportunity for a better choice than shooting or smoking. Solace for the person in active addiction comes with the solace of numbing and the absence of withdrawal symptoms. There is no euphoria, for that left months or years before when his or her brain chemistry adjusted to all the foreign chemicals in its system. What remains is a memory of that initial euphoria and a compulsion to chase it, no matter the cost. Science can teach us the treatments and the interventions, and science can tell us what prevention programs work and what public service announcements have the greatest impact. But even if we are not scientists or practitioners of scientific interventions, we can play a role in fighting the opioid epidemic by our innate ability to form caring relationships with other human beings. Addiction is not a normal state of being. Moreover, it is not an aspirational state. In other words, if someone has an addiction, it is very likely that something has gone terribly wrong in their lives. That terribly wrong can be trauma, exposure, or even genetic factors, but almost universally, addiction stems from and develops in social isolation. Think about how many times in our days we ask others how they are doing. Consider the change we could catalyze if only we used that greeting when we are ready to listen. Every parent I know states that pulling one of their children away from a screen for a walk outside is almost always difficult for both parties, but it is also almost always rewarding. Speaking to a teenager in a tutoring situation can develop into a trusting relationship when adolescent concerns are shared and the teenager knows they are having a normal reaction to a seeming abnormal stage of life. A conversation at the mailbox or in the lunch line can be a chance to break the isolation of a postpartum mother or an isolated senior. We don't have to commit 30 minutes to every conversation, but we occasionally do have the time and interest for such a conversation. We could challenge ourselves to do so on a regular basis. The opioid epidemic may seem overwhelming. In fact, it's the first time in this generation that many of us have had firsthand experience of a loved one or acquaintance suffering in an epidemic. But we don't need to stand on the sidelines. Part of the cure for this epidemic is the same as previous epidemics. We must uncover the cause and care for those affected. But we also have a truly powerful tool to help many avoid the epidemic, provide the human connection, and fight the isolation that drives someone to a needle or a pill. Put other choices in front of the person who has no hope. Form communities of conversation that honor and support our isolated members. By putting our values into action, we will change our communities and our cultures. One of the great doers of the last century was St. Teresa of Calcutta. Never one to shy away from apparently insurmountable challenges, she found ways to fight epidemics of AIDS, poverty, and isolated deaths. By serving others, building a workforce, and telling their stories. Her pragmatic approach to faith can inspire us in these times as well. I used to pray that God would feed the hungry, or do this or that, but now I pray that He will guide me to do whatever I'm supposed to do, what I can do. I used to pray for answers, but now I'm praying for strength. I used to believe that prayer changes things, but now I know that prayer changes us, and we change things.